following is a discussion from a conference in Cork in January, celebrating 100 years of Irish radio, broadcast to podcast. And this discussion is talking of the Irish radio industry, the future, from broadcast to podcast.
So I'm really excited about this panel because this is the future. This is the actual title of our conference, Broadcast to Podcast. And what I'm going to do is, you know, I'm going to just give the titles of each of these people that are on the panel with me, but I'm going to let them, almost like a witness in the court, why should we trust ye in the role that you're in? And what is it that you're going to do, and what do you see about the future of radio that's a threat? Now, we've Cleanly Onloon here from RT. She's very talented. She's an RT producer, and she does a lot of work on the arts and culture. So we're going to talk to her in a few moments and ask her, like, how does she see her particular purview and area of radio? Is it under threat or is it thriving? What's going to happen with it? We have Ruth here, Ruth Fitzsimmons, and Ruth is the digital director of Bar Media, and I am just so dying to know what the hell that means and what you do and what are your various, you know, what's your ambit, what kind of different radio stations do you deal with, and you know what you actually do, right? Isn't it beautifully optic that we've only one man here? So, and I think it debunks the whole thing from this morning that yes, we are in the ascendancy, female. Ciarán Cunningham, the Chief Executive Officer of Radio Centre Ireland. Again, I am dying to know what you do and what your role is and just share it with us all. And somebody really important who is Claire Diamond, who's the Commissioner for Broadcast... Director of Licensed Broadcasters and Video on Demand, right? The longest title ever. So again, we're going to discover what does Claire do in terms of Commissioner Newman? Like, how is she going to look into the future? What kind of a future vision does she have? And how will it affect the future of broadcasting? And so, Claire, we'll actually start with you. So just tell us what you do, why you do it, and why should we trust you?
Okay, I'm not very good at using microphones, so do tell me if I go off mic. So what we do, a big part of my job is licensing. And actually when I joined the BCI 20 years ago, as it was then known, that was, I joined as a licensing and compliance officer.
So we'll just keep it up to your mouth.
Sorry.
It's right up there.
Yeah. Can you hear me? I need some practice in the radio station, actually. So when I joined the BCI Broadcasting Commission of Ireland 20 years ago, I was also licensing. Back then it was very different. It was about increasing the number of services, increasing diversity, introducing regional youth services as well, because we didn't have regional youth music-driven services, and obviously, you know, local format to target the all adult audience, so it can't cater to everyone, particularly the youth. Lots of diverse interests, as you know. So I suppose looking to the future, so we license radio on FM predominantly. We define when we advertise service. Now, we haven't done licensing in a while, but when we advertise service, it's defined by station type. So is it local format, which means it has strong local relevance, local news and current affairs, a high percentage of local news and current affairs. We've heard that over the last yesterday as well. And we also define it by geographical area as well. So we have three national stations, independent national stations, in addition to all the services provided by RTE. We have three regional, youth regional services, music-driven, and then we've lots of local stations which are licensed on the county or multi-county basis as well.
So, just to interrupt you a second, just for people. So how often do people have to apply for a license, and do they have to reinvent themselves each time, or do they have to, do you identify new niche areas, do you think that a region is missing a particular, you know, broadcasting service? Are you part of that identifying group, or do people come to you and say, look, we're thinking of starting off this radio station? What do they have to prove to you to do that?
Well, first of all, in terms of the licenses that are there at the moment, so the 33 commercial licenses, they come up every 10 years. So we advertise the service, so there's a public competition. And if we only get one, on the last licensing round, we recently relicensed 24 of the 33. and it was the incumbent, and the incumbent means the existing operator, applied for the contract. So they provide the same, well, they provide the same service because it's, you know, they are embedded in the community, it's doing really well, it provides public service content. So they don't, you know, we do look at any changes they want to make, and we do have to, like, we are a regulator, we have to implement the legislation. The legislation does impose certain programming requirements on stations as well, so we ensure that they, you know, they provide Irish language programming, they provide the required level of news and current affairs, you know, a mix of music and mix of special speech. So that's the existing landscape. But then we are looking to the future now, like to the next 5 years. And sorry, I'm going off mic, am I?
So if you just keep it, like every time you move your head, bring that with you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah. So looking to the future, look, we do want to look at, you know, the service provision. We did do audience research last year, looking at gaps, you know, how well people were served by the FM licenses, and was there an interest in other types of stations as well.
So we'll get to that, hold that thought.
Okay.
We'll get back to what are the types of stations. Ciarán, what do you do?
So I'm not sure if everybody's familiar with Radio Centre Ireland. It's essentially a business-to-business brand. It was established 4 years ago by both RTE and the independent sector, IBI, came together to create Radio Centre Ireland. And pretty clearly my role is, or the role of Radio Centre Ireland, is to market the medium to advertisers and agencies. It's very much a commercial role. So we can continue to bring revenue into the sector to make the sector sustainable into the future. That's a big challenge because John Purcell alluded to this yesterday. I'm not sure if you all know this, but 6 out of 10 of every euro spent in advertising in Ireland goes to two companies. One's called Alphabet, the parent company of Google. The other's Meta, the parent company of Facebook. So it's a big challenge for Radio Centre Ireland to continually talk to advertisers, talk to agencies, and ensure the sustainable revenue into the future. So that's essentially what Radio Centre Ireland does. If you go onto the website, there's lots of great, I think, resource on the website for all radio stations or advertisers to understand the power of the medium. So
yeah, great.
That's what I do.
Again, we'll come back to you. And Ruth, yours is a big title. Director of Digital, it's sort of like the future is looming. And tell us a bit about Bauer and what stations they own and, you know, just give us a background.
Yeah, so for those who might not be aware, Bauer, you know, owns quite a few stations now in the Irish market, the likes of News Talk and Today FM, Spin. I feel like I'm going to be given out if I get one wrong here. Red here in Cork, but also the likes of iHeart, Spin Southwest and Beat. And in addition to those radio stations, we also have two other podcast brands. So that's Off the Ball and also the Go Loud podcast network as well. And so, you know, for us, we have that big footprint. We reach about 2.2 million Irish people on a weekly basis in terms of the listenership across the group. But in addition to that, we have many more, you know, millions of listeners that are tuning into the podcast and now also watching us on video and increasingly coming to events that we're putting on as well or subscribing to our podcast. So, you know, part of my role coming in is increasing the ways that we engage with those audiences and Irish audiences. You know, the way we engage with audio is so different from kind of 20 years ago, right? Core to this is live radio, just to be clear, okay? People love their live radio, and we see that 90% of people in Ireland are listening to live radio on a weekly basis. That's an extraordinary number. They're getting in their car, and that's why that car conversation about keeping in car and radio is so important to us. But they're not just listening in that way anymore, right? They are listening to a podcast. You know, Lines of Inquiry is one of our podcasts, and it's been at the top of the Apple and Spotify charts. And, you know, the amount of people who are listening while they're walking the dog or while they're making their food, and we see that when we do kind of our studies and research. So how do we reach new audiences, not just with our pre-existing podcast brands like Go Loud and Off the Ball, but with some of the radio stations? How can we make adjacent podcasts? And then in addition to that, what are we doing around video? How are we engaging those audiences? Because we know video is a bigger part of that experience and how people experience what's happening in the studio. They are watching that now, and we have to think about how younger audiences want to engage with that. And in addition to that, we're trying to make more data-led decisions. So how do we incorporate data into that? How are we making sure that metadata means that we are showing up when people are searching for things? You know, if someone's searching for a topic, we don't just want that to go to social media. We also want to be a part of that conversation. So it's a mixture of all of those. And then we're also looking at our own Go Loud app product, which is creating an ecosystem for Bauer, so that, you know, if you want to go and you want to listen to Claire Byrne, who's joining us soon, or you want to listen to, you know, your favorite podcast, you can do so in the same app, and we better understand what those user journeys are, and therefore hopefully we can better service them, both in terms of the type of content we show them, but also the type of advertising that we show them, that it's more relevant. So yeah, it's a big job in one sense, but actually in some senses it's a very practical job of how do we serve the right content for the right people in the right kind of manner and medium.
Really interesting. I'd like to see a little bit of battle here now, the winner between the advertising cut and how to keep the Irish, you know, is Onyx the...
Yeah, Onyx is, you know, so in the market at the moment, I guess you would have kind of the RT Player, Onyx, Go Loud, and then of course we have the likes of Spotify. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our competitors in this space are Spotify and they are YouTube. So in that digital space, you know, there are other competitors in that space as well, and we need to think of ways that make our product, you know, compelling for younger and older listeners. Mm-hmm.
So that's really interesting. So we move to Cliona then, and you know, when you think of arts and culture, Cliona, how can you compete? Tell us, you know, in the sense that, you know, we're talking about digital, and suddenly we're moving back to the arts, and, you know, will they even know Shakespeare in a few years from now? Will they even know our playwrights? You know, how safe do you feel about your role in curating and continuing to create the arts sector and to produce the high level of cultural programming that you do in radio? Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you've been involved in.
Okay, well, first I'll say anybody who saw Hamlet knows that Shakespeare was the future, the same way as arts and culture is always the future, because it has the freedom and it has the independence to be a free thinker. It doesn't follow the market. It follows the human being's desire and need to make sense of itself in this world. Always, has always done that. And that's a huge thing to both bite, chew, digest, as the forms in which we talk to ourselves and about ourselves changes, especially accelerating at the moment. A few things have come to mind, and it's brilliant to be back here. I'm a graduate of UCC, so of course, and a few of the other speakers, I'm not a Cork nor a Munster person, but giving a context to the place, I was an emigrant in Spain and happened to catch RT Radio of a Sunday night. I heard Sean O'Callaghan giving the results of the sporting news, because I was at that stage, I was living in Santander, which any of you who know your geography almost has a straight sea run across all the way to Cork and then on up to any of the masts we have. But that was a moment. It was 6 months later I came to this wonderful place and I started postgraduate in management. And the reason I'm giving this context, it seems a bit roundabout, but it was in culture, tourism, heritage. It was like the podcast scene now, the new radio stations. There was a blitz, and any of you who are even of a certain age and many ages will know that there was a rash of heritage centres, extensions to museums, art centres, all built in the 90s with that new money we got from Europe. So I was part of that, coming home to Ireland to become a professional manager, telling our story to ourselves and to the world through these places. So I would have come through here, and I'll also add now that when we talk about the future, I can't help thinking but of Mr. Toad at the end of Wind in the Willows. We all know the story where he loves his car, his gorgeous car, and then he abandons it because he sees an aeroplane, you know? And we know both those things still survive after all of these years. Mm. So what we always have to be believing in is the material that we're working with. So when we talk about sport, you know, earlier, it's the passion of that that brings something along. And we talked about, you know, if we're talking about politics, news, I like to think that in arts and culture, we sometimes think about events and sparkles and like midnight and our culture night and things like that. Just like in politics, we can't have a general election every night, okay? You have to have the local council, you have your local TD and all of that. Art is made, culture is made slowly, gradually through a life. And all of that is really important in relation to how I totally and fully believe in the stories we tell creatively in Ireland. And I think there's no worry that they keep cropping up, you know, and that is how we invent and reinvent ourselves.
That's really interesting because, like, we're going to talk about the elephant which is not in the room and which is AI. And, you know, we'll say publishing houses recently made a very good point. They said they were getting a huge increase in people sending in manuscripts that were AI generated. And they sent out a note to all these people and said, if you couldn't be bothered to write it, we couldn't be bothered to read it. And I think we have to look at that as well. If we go back to Claire there, like, how are we going to embrace AI? Now, I know in Britain, in BBC, that they actually have licensed some AI usage. And they're allowing programs. They're saying this is an AI-generated song or program. What are we going to do here? What's happening?
AI will play a huge transformation, huge part in the transformation of radio. And just you mentioned BBC there, and I think the BBC website on objects-based media, which is an AI technology, it's a really good insight into the potential of AI into delivering more personalised content. So it talks about making perfect content just for you. Mm. So tailoring content to your particular circumstances, your media habits, and also your devices. So it gives an example. There's lots of examples on the website, so like it's really interesting. But they give the example of you miss your favourite arts programme 4 out of 5 nights. It knows you've missed the programme. It will produce a personalised programme, catch-up programme, just for you, but not the duration you want it. So it knows your commute to work is an hour. That program would fit your commute. So it's really interesting. But then, look, on the other side, we know there's lots of risks with AI, and unfortunately we have seen those materialise. So there is the risk of, you know, speaking of personalisation, the Taoiseach mentioned information bubbles, news bubbles, polarisation, biased data. You know, we all saw the example of the deepfake video circulating at the last election, and same with deepfake audio as well, so it misleads, misrepresents facts, spreads mis and disinformation. So look, those risks are the focus of the new EU Artificial Intelligence Act, and Commissioner Mann will have a role under that act. So I think, look, the broadcasting sector is a really responsible sector, and I think, you know, the Act focuses on high-risk models that have can cause real harm. You know, I suppose over the next year, we look forward to working with broadcasters to see how they are using AI, how they plan to use AI, and develop guidelines with them, because we will be publishing principles around the use of AI, and we'll be focused on transparent, ethical, and also responsible use of AI. And we know the broadcasters will do that in the event. But just reflecting on, just when you mentioned AI...
You're not going to get a sort of an application from an AI kind of bot or something, are you, for a license? You know, I mean, like, how vigilant are you going to be?
In terms of what we get in?
Yeah.
Well, look, we meet the people. You know, like, the application process, you know, we require lots of information about the directors, the shareholders, and it is, you know, it's a very robust process. So yes, we go out and meet them, we do station visits. But look, just reflecting on the conversation, particularly in yesterday, in the panel discussions yesterday, and there were excellent panel discussions, you know, the words that were mentioned, like, it was human companion, human real-time connection, intimacy, passion, empathy, when we were talking about Liveline, trusted friends, and human voice telling human stories. And John, you mentioned yesterday, this is a room full of people who are really passionate about radio. So look, I think if you take the humanized radio, what do you have left? So that's why AI really, it should be used as a tool to enhance human creativity, enhance human judgment, but it can't replace it.
I'm just really curious, because I couldn't agree more, and I think actually the studies that we see, it's like,
Radio has a 70% trust rate, right? Just contrast that with social media, which is 30%, right? You know what I mean? So it kind of shows that. But in some ways, that's actually a bit of a salvation for us in the future, is trust. I think, I don't know if anyone's looked on any social media recently, it could be really hard to spot what is real and what is false. Like, it's, even if you think you know and you think you're good at spotting it, it's increasingly hard. And I think while this is going to be an exploration, I think we will see a lot of exploration and innovation in it, in the sector of AI and how we use it within the broadcast landscape. I do feel like we wouldn't want to see some of that trust eroded, and whether that's us having to label what is artificially created. And I think when there is a label on it, it allows people to kind of take things with a pinch of salt. But it also, for, you know, people who are playing by the rules of the regulator and are kind of doing that, there's a halo effect of us saying, you know, our content is made by real people and we have a responsibility and we can be trusted. And I think as we get into a bit of an AI slop on certain social media platforms, you know, you are seeing people going back to trusted media providers because they are kind of going, I don't know what's real anymore, and I need to go to some of these trusted media brands who might be local or might be national or wherever they're from, but they kind of go, a real person made this. So okay. I think that's
sure. Yeah. Yeah. Just might come in here. I would have a lot of partnerships and collaborations with the likes of the Arts Council or the Heritage Council and that. And there is a little sense that we're all having the same conversation separately. You know, that I was hosting something with the Laureate of Fiction, Eilis Ni Chuimhne, and she was saying, well, one thing AI is not going to be able to understand my inside of my head. And it was just, she was making that point, that they won't manage to write her story, you know. And she's our most celebrated current writer for the next 2 years, representing Ireland. Fiona Gourke, who's a professor of poetry, the same way. It is a question that we are all asking. And I think the fact that, yes, we do get jaded of things, and we are actually, we should never underestimate how bright we are and how questioning we are all the time. I know exactly what you mean when you're scrolling down and all that. We can go into that and use a lot of energies that may not be necessary at all, that we actually should believe more in the human being, and exactly the words that you're saying there about, you know, our humanity, empathy. Now, I always say, never think that arts and cultures are for our well-being or our health. That was another word I was saying, that we can't sort everything through arts and culture, and it's sometimes said that we do, and that's the function of it. It's not that at all. It's far more laborious and tedious than that. But just, I am a firm, not romantically believing in that AI is not going to defeat us, but that actually I believe other things will come along, you know. And I was talking to my own crew a little bit earlier today about where's the future. You see, to me, the next 10 minutes is the future, you know. Like, our, you know, we are the past already, if we want to go into, you know, some of the philosophers. So what is the future? It's the question we've always asked. And what is in the future? God knows. So it is, I think there's a wonderful thing that if any media does, media itself, we're wonderful at coping with change. I remember former DG Cathal Gowan saying to us, if there's one thing we're involved in, other than providing content and making content and finding stories, is actually managing change all the time, particularly in what we used to call the wireless radio, and particularly now audio. So I have quite belief in that we'll all be grand. We don't know how we will be, but we'll be grand. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think? That's a real Cork thing as well. It'll all be grand in the morning.
I was here too long.
What do you think? I mean, you're now at the kind of the cutting edge. You're trying to keep an Irish radio community alive commercially. I mean, what are the threats for you there?
I think the first thing, the superpower of radio is human connection. It really is, and no other media can compete with that. You know, it's that unbridled, unscripted, consumed live. It's really powerful, and, you know, I always think people don't consume radio, they live with it. It's part of their everyday life. It's weaved into everything they do, and that's incredibly powerful. And I don't think radio will ever lose that. And the Jane Adore speaks to that. I know we spoke about it yesterday, the 80% listening each day, 90% listening every week. and Harry, 61% of 15 to 24-year-olds, do listen on a daily basis. And do you know why they do? Because radio stations employ young presenters to create content that is for young people. It's designed for young people, so why wouldn't they listen to it? And they do. I think AI to work with radio is going to improve things. So, for example, I think how we package everything or bring... We have to now, in the future, it's not people going to radio. We have to go to them and fit into their lives. So if you take a radio program, it might be a two-hour program, and in that 2 hours, you might have sport, you might have music, you might have drama. Not everybody's interested in every moment. So what AI can help us do is package that up in kind of verticals, which are bringing all similar interests together, and give that to people in a way that they can consume easily and relevant to them. So I think AI has a really great potential to help the sector bring relevant content to people when they want it. I think that's really powerful. I think AI will also help in terms of back office, in terms of making that more economic. It will help a little bit in the advertising world, and in terms of how you use AI, in terms of research and audience research. So I think AI will enhance radio, but that the power of radio is the human connection. And also to the trust point that you mentioned earlier, social media tends to break everything down into black and white, and people don't want black and white. You know, life is a bit grey. It's a bit, you know, it's not black and white. And there was a report from Newsworks in the UK last week that people are really looking for help in understanding different perspectives and understanding the world. And journalistic content, proper editorial content, can help people understand that it's not black and white, that in the world is a lot of grey. And I think AI can also help enhance that. But again, it's the power of radio, being able to communicate different perspectives to people, I think is a real power.
It's a bit like, I suppose, years ago, De Valera said, television is like an atomic bomb. You know, you can use it for good or evil. And as we talked about this morning, and your point is very relevant there, Cian, about like we are going to adapt to change, right? But what I wonder about then is, just going back to you, Cian, is, you know, have we sectioned off people into, you know, the older listener, the younger listener, that a lot, and this will be relevant to you as well, of course, like that, you know, how do we bring, we say, an older audience with us if we're going to have all these podcasts and have all, like, because people have a love of the wireless, of radio, and they like it the old way. And it was mentioned this morning about now that you're going into do an interview, you're now being videoed as you're being, you know, that it's not the radio anymore. You're now kind of full, you know, 360 degrees. What do you think?
Again, I think the age, yes, we get all the figures of people and the ages they are and all of that. The older listener, the younger listener. I think sometimes they're the questions the JLNRs ask, and they're the questions we often come up with the answers in. Maybe it's, again, the area I work in. If I go to Croke Park, for example, right, I see every age group there. You know, I've brought my children since they were this bit and on. And I talk to a 90-year-old next to me, and we're all watching hurling or football, okay? I do believe that, again, content will lead that. I happen to be the producer of Sunday Miscellany, the RT radio programme, for many years. And I did this little radical thing when I came back from maternity leave. And again, we were talking about women earlier. You sort of think you have to come back and do something new after you've had a baby because, you know, you've gone off the scene. So you do something little radical and you make Sunday Miscellany live. You know, so you put it in front of an audience, and we've never looked back. Like, we're now sellout scenes. We could go to the Lincoln Hall in New York if we want. We'd fill it out with all the immigrants and Irish people we're talking about around the world. But what I'm really talking about is the age groups, to me, can sometimes be obsessive. Now, I know they're a fact too, okay? And maybe there's the element of that's live radio, you know, as we talk about it. But there are a lot of areas also that are there because people want to hear them and see them. And I know from experience that the variety of age groups is, you know, when we do live programs or live events and things like that, they're critically different, you know, and they have changed over the years, but they're to do with the live event as well, that you can actually see your audience. I'd be a big believer in doing a lot more of that.
Yeah.
And this, we've been talking a lot, I suppose, about live radio. You know, we talk radio, that they're there, they're real, they're all that. There's many a person who often thought the programmes I did and do are live, okay? Even today, people think that. I'd love if people were as articulate and conversational the way that I've edited them, our colleagues have edited them. It's amazing, because people, the reason is, again, it's the company of radio.
Yes.
That you are listening in when you're editing to a listener, to say, but it's not live radio. And I think just maybe to bring it to that for a little bit, because we have been talking about live radio for most of the time, and again about this investment in collaborations, commissioning people. Who was it who said, make it new, like in the 1930s, make it new, that wonderful phrase. And it was Sean O'Morgan who told me that, whispered it to my ear one time. I was going up for an award, he told me, you haven't got the award, but just say what you need to say. You're on live television, you have 2 minutes. And it was such a great, generous piece of advice, of this just making it new. Mm. And Clare FM, for example, the prize, they, you know, now Colin Farrell, I presume, is the lead in that story, yeah. I think, as I'm often doing a lot of casting. But we often start from a little gem. Again, I have the good fortune through Commissioner Mann to have done a lot of commissioning of wonderful stories that have ended up, or not ended up, continue to move out into the world. Roisin O'Donnell's novel of the year, Nesting, was a commission, joint commission by RTE and Commissioner Mann, has gone on to become novel of the year, published in America. These small little things that you start on radio, again, this is the little brilliant muscle that radio is, and going into audio. They're all available on podcasts, so as well.
Yeah.
But it's just that mix of age group again. You've people in their 20s reading Nesting.
Yeah.
You've people in their 80s reading Nesting. And I'm saying reading, but then they go back to the podcast, because guess who read it first? Oh yes, I'm in Cork.
Yeah.
Siobhan McSweeney read it, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so this sort of interrelation between the real world out there and what we're hearing.
Yeah.
And again, I'd say that's the future,
yeah,
of being in touch with that, the big out world. It's very important to be open to everything,
yeah.
I think it's really,
there's
really
great
critical.
Energy there, Cliona, that just give you a bit of kind of positivity. What do you think, like, you know, I know that we know JNLR, they're telling you this, you know, I'm not, we said that they're hugely trustworthy, but like, you have to kind of tweak it a bit, like, for your audiences, like, what do you think, you know, who's your audience?
Like, I do think it's interesting that on the JNLR point, we did a piece of research recently where we looked at our app usage, and it's not a million miles off the JNLR numbers. They're really quite consistent. Do you know what I mean? Just to be clear, they're pretty on the money. Like, you know, there's slight tweaks in different things, which we would expect. Younger audiences can be harder to get into apps, you know. So, you know, there's some nuance in there, but they're not huge. I wouldn't say they're wrong. Do you know what I mean? We recognize those audiences. I think we've always, I don't think speaking to audiences is a new thing. We've always kind of had different shows, different content for different audiences, whether that's in print or on radio. I think one of the things that is maybe slightly different now is the content, it's not just about content anymore, it's about accessibility, and accessibility through how are people accessing that content. And so, you know, as I said, you know, we will have certain networks like News Talk where we will have a slightly older listenership, right, who, for them, you know, they still want to get in touch, and we have all audiences getting in touch with the likes of, we did Pat Kenny, did a big piece around presidential elections, and we had a live debate in studio, and, you know, it was kind of interesting because we have a lot of people listening to that live, probably a slightly older demographic listening to it live. We have another audience that's watching it on YouTube, and another audience that's consuming social media clips, and another audience that is, you know, going back and listening to a podcast about it. But that is just access points to the content, right? You know, the content is the content at the end of the day. It's, if it's compelling content, then people are going to seek it out. The key difference, I think, now is you have to be accessible. It's how do we continuously make those access points easy for people to get into? And I think this is also the piece of work that we need to be able to do to understand who's listening, because from a revenue perspective, you know, it's like, how am I getting in touch with these people? Who is that audience? Why should I sponsor this instead of giving it to Meta and Google, which literally will pump you out data, you know, by a million miles, you know? So I don't think it's us going, we're only catering to this audience. It's, we need to understand those audiences well if we're to best serve them, you know what I mean? And serving them is both technically and the content. Content is the king, really, at the end of the day.
So that question's being posed to you there, like, how hung up are we on audiences? Like, I mean, when you're going in and you're saying, like, are we catering enough? Do you kind of, not saying you wake up in the night, you're on and say, my God, how am I going to keep my younger audience? But, I mean, are you talking to the advertisers? Are you talking to the radio stations and saying, look, we need to look at this demographic more. This is not being served. Like, how are you doing it? How are you going to keep it real?
Well, I think there's no better opportunity with technology that you can create content for any audience, young or old. Like, it's incredible. Like, you talked about podcasts earlier. Actually, podcasts, people might realize, podcasts are not a particularly young medium. It's actually across the range.
Yeah.
So you talked about an older audience earlier. You have a content that's specifically for an older audience that you may decide podcast is the route to communicate whatever that subject matter is. So, like, there's never been a more exciting time to create content for whichever audience you want. And then the key thing is discoverability, how the people know that content is theirs and so that they can access it easily. And actually, AI can help with that, and technology can help with that. From an advertiser's point of view, they're looking for all sorts of different audiences. But actually, what advertisers tend to want is large audiences. That's because the more people they get to communicate with, the more of their brands they will sell. So they tend to people. They are looking for all audiences, but technology allows all broadcasters to cater for all audiences way more than they could ever do before. Like, it's an opportunity. I wouldn't be scared about it. I think it's a brilliant opportunity for all broadcasters. So it's a really exciting time. And it's about how you package that content up and how you make people aware of it and give them easy access to it.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a great sense of energy in podcasting.
Could I just finish with that? When you're talking technology again, we haven't actually maybe talked about the websites. Mm-hmm. Again, arts and culture, but just speaking even broadly with RTE, with our website, we like to make friends, partnerships with, by putting other people's work up on our websites, because we think that is like, it's like asking people into tea a bit. That's a sense of, yeah, we really like what you do as well. And actually, a lot of the time, they are the people that we want to work with in the future. We talk about, you know, the community stations, Radio Nilifa there, for example, starting off, you know, with the junior person. We have people writing articles for RT Culture, for RTE.ie in general. We have Brainstorm there that is collaborative with this wonderful university and with other places. Indeed, your own articles, Fionnuala, have appeared on that. So, in a sense, RTE going forward, it's a sharing space of knowledge and curiosity, and, you know, that thing of the website is something that we would really take with great importance, and that actually maybe even series of podcasts that other organisations have run, that we're very happy to share them with them. And then, of course, we have RTE Supporting the Arts as well, which, again, we may not cover something, but we're drawing attention to it, and it seemed to be very valuable. We're talking about the advertising, you know, the interval acts with advertising between programmes and during programmes. They're all very, very important for keeping the populations of Ireland connected with us, because again, then there's a two-way thing, that when we want them to do something with us, we're already friends, we already know each other, and I'm a firm believer in reaching out all the time, that actually does make huge sense, and it doesn't cost all that much money, you know, to take a train, to have a coffee, to do that, to attend things. That's the huge part as well, I suppose, in the general field I'm in, to attend, to talk. The amount of people I've met here, you know, why aren't you doing it next year, girl? Like, but that sort of thing of the
I'm
talk,
retiring.
You know, know, but all of that, again, and again, the history element, again, should really reassure us that everything is okay, because, again, as a historian yourself, you know things are cyclical.
Can I just say, it's that thing of video killed the radio star, and actually MTV is gone, and we're all still sitting here.
And remember the documentary on BlackBerry, is it? Is it the BlackBerry?
And we don't even remember what BlackBerry is. Obama had one.
Claire, what do you think?
Radio has experimented very well with short-form video.
Yeah.
The youth stations.
All the time.
Yeah, so internet, like they've used internet to really celebrate the linear and bring people, extend the reach and try out new formats. So I think that's really important to say about radio and how it's embraced new technologies.
So what would you be open to in terms of licensed broadcasters? I mean, do you see any new sort of trends emerging? Like, we know we've talked about AI, but there's a sense here that we're going to embrace it. But, you know, what would you like to see coming, you know, to you looking for a license? What kind of areas would you like to see that be more explored?
We do want to explore the possibility of licensing youth Irish language stations. And there was, you know, really speaking to the points that Garo had made, that young people, you know, they want the same very broad range of content that they have in English, but they want it in Irish. So we conducted a feasibility study into that, and we expect to publish the report quite soon. But just, I suppose, reflecting where young audiences are spending their time, we do want to consider hybrid platforms as well, so not just FM, but also, you know, maybe DAB Plus or internet as well. And I know a content hub was mentioned. I think it's John Walsh mentioned the content hub. So again, that's something that young people really want. And you were talking about accessibility. The other thing young people really want is a strong user experience. So,
like, I couldn't agree more. Like, I think they have there's a definite expectation among younger users that they are able to, you know, hear the content, see the content on demand, with the metadata, with links to things, you know what I mean? That they can interact with it, they can leave comments. You know, I think it's a very multimedia and tech savvy. And, you know, one of the things that we've seen is we actually, you know, we really invested into a lot of social video over the last year, App Hour, and it's just been really, really interesting. You know, I think one of the things in podcasting terms is 33% of people find a podcast via social media. And so, you know, that's where some of our audience are. And I think it is interesting because what we've seen over the last 10 years in the podcasting space very, very much is that 15 to 24-year-olds, I don't think this will surprise anyone with a teenager in this audience, are watching a lot of video, right? But then what happens? You start working. You start going to work or you start being busy and you cannot watch a screen all the time, right? You are starting to listen to audio. But we need to be present in those spaces so that we are brands that they know and trust and are interested in and are telling great stories with personalities and topics that they like so that they can transition into this space. And I think, like we've all been talking about, this radio space is becoming more fluid. You know, we're now putting on huge events. Talking Bollocks is one of our podcasts, and we had a huge event in Bord Gáis Theatre, 2,000 people. And I don't know if anyone attended, but it was crazy. People were standing up, clapping, screaming. We did a gender reveal. We had, like, confetti falling. It was like a big gig. And I think there's a parasocial relationship that people have always had with their favourite broadcasters. But it's also now on video, and there's a lot more behind-the-scenes content being created. So, you know, again, technology allows us to kind of hear, rather than people just phoning in, maybe as we would have years ago, people are leaving comments, they're taking that piece of content and creating videos that they're stitching onto. So they're being creative too. Our listeners are being creative as well. And I think it's really for us to embrace that and kind of come to them on their terms.
What about, do you want to add anything to that?
No, it's absolutely true. Everything you said is interesting. I think at the sports panel earlier, you're talking about the tri-paracle. But I remember back in 1990 in the World Cup, then But what was amazing about the goal a couple of months back, it was all celebrated on social media. You could share that content, which you could never do years ago. So you were able to see and relive that moment time and time again. And all the radio stations and podcasts were reliving that moment through all the social content that they had to talk about it. So it's just a very different world, but I think a really exciting world that nobody should be scared of.
But is there some fear there, though? Colin Bowie spoke this morning about, you know, thinking, you know, he'd done a great podcast, and then he went down through the list of comments, and some of them could be very offensive, you know? And you're wondering, like, how safe are they? Because now they're talking back. Before, they'd ring up and they'd own it. You knew the voice. They had ownership of their comment. But then we have the kind of the surfers, and we have the people who are just generally, you know, the trolls. And you know, you find then, I mean, I know myself, I was on radio and I got huge hate mail over some comments I made, and I was saying, oh, for God's sake, would you ever go on again? But I did. But the thing is that, like, how do you protect against that? You know what I mean? In the sense that, you know, how do you protect against the fact that, you know, is there a system of, you know, of ensuring that your broadcasters are safe or...
Well, I was going to say that sometimes we get very shocked by things like that. Mm-hmm. Again, there's nothing new in the sun about being insulted. When people couldn't read or write, people were throwing things. There were stars put on buildings. There was graffiti put on walls. There was, you know, that has always been the case. Mm-hmm. And sure, we've all covered stories on that sort of thing where, you know, people have... had things said about them. I think there is that little thing again about maybe some of that is, again, we're in a very, very self-absorbed phase, I think, in the world generally. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to be very much seeing this. You know, we've had different trends in Ireland, but across the world at different times, where things are very important. And at the moment, it is very much to do with self-identification. You know, who are you? It could be to do with the bigger thing of what's going on in the world. We're all very, very nervous in a general way about what's going on in the world. But we're all so much closer to each other about what we see in the world. So I think there has to be a bit more resilience in relation to how we behave ourselves to others, and to be aware that those things happen. Mm. And to be maybe a little less shocked about them, if I dare say, as a history graduate, that those things, again, have already happened.
You're telling me to toughen up, is it?
I'm actually telling us to get a little bit real, that we can actually, in the end, a lot of that can spiral other awful things too. In the spiralling sense of excitability, for want of a story. Mm-hmm. That last week's story where that happened isn't even remembered.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of common sense. Mm-hmm. We all are, we've talked about privilege in the room over the last 2 days. Anybody who's in a formal public situation with communication, like when I'm dealing again with anybody, and I know across my wonderful colleagues in all different types of programming, it's very, very important that you put your contributor at ease, that we know these things, that we're in touch with people about what might happen. Mm. All those things are very, very important. Yeah. But we also should remember that people who are studying media are learning those things too. And that, again, it's again a bit of belief that not to let those things overwhelm us. I'm actually getting more impatient. Who used the word cross? Yes, it was Sarah McInerney, I think, who used the word cross about being asked about women in the media and that. But I think we can be a little bit too sensationalist sometimes about that this is the thing that's happening, mm-hmm. or that these awful things are happening. Mm-hmm. I think we can get some things like that because it's getting closer to us, mm-hmm. where we're seeing things, like mm-hmm. that we saw Dublin on fire, for example. But actually, isn't it true we've seen a lot of other places on fire and we haven't got as alarmed? Mm-hmm. Are things that haven't been part of our direct experience. Mm-hmm. So I think just a lot of calm and, again, balanced trust and all of those things are really, really important for us to stay steady, you know, and navigate through some very, very choppy waters, for sure. Yeah. I wouldn't underestimate. Mm. But just that we need to keep going calm. You know, with a lot of what we do.
I do agree with that but I also think I lived in the UK during the Brexit years. And I also think you have to acknowledge when there is some radical change happening. You know what I mean? And I think we're at a point, and we saw that with some of the Dublin riots, and we have to acknowledge that. That's not necessarily a pretty part of our reality, right? They're not pretty things to say, and it's all very well and nice to talk about pretty things, but sometimes...
I should come in here just to sort of say we're turning like John Person now and Harry Brown. That's not the intention at all. No, it's not to... if only we were on a podcast, it would be brilliant, wouldn't it? No, I must have misinterpreted there. It's not that they should be covered. My goodness, I was there that night, or any of those things. No, it's not that we don't cover them. I'm talking about giving too much space to radical reaction to them, which is an entirely different thing. I mean it in that grown-up awareness way. No, absolutely, good Lord, cover, that's our world. But it's about being aware of where we can go overboard with what's written about these things. In qualifying that they have always existed, those reactions to things, as long as people were around.
Absolutely.
The stone throwing and all of that in the Bible, for God's sake,
Well, I suppose, you're talking about, which is no longer, hopefully, an issue, gatekeeping, deciding what should be on the news and what shouldn't. But I think we've become more discerning. Now, I'm going to open it to the floor, so I'll let my Susan Sarah. We'll take a few here, because this is our last session, and you know what? It's something that we need to embrace and we need to be able to reflect on. So bring it on.
Thanks very much, Nola. Just want to follow up on the last point, really, and a percentage that Ruth mentioned earlier of 70% trust rating in radio. And as a former news journalist, I think news is a crucial factor there. And with the polarisation of media in the States, for example, we see the same direct travel in the UK side of us. So I know we can't, but how do we ring fence that 70% trust in radio when it comes to news? Big question, sorry.
So Flair and et al., when you're holding the microphone, don't hold it at the end, because you're blocking the signal. Take it in the top part, okay? Right.
I have to say, I think that trust thing is really the one thing we have to keep a hold of. If I'm going to say one other thing, it's to be a trusted media, is to be the media that, people kind of continue to believe in and continue to want to come back in. And, across a large number of organisations here, Ask Bauer, I'm thinking the news talk team, some of the news teams at RTE, and we could go through this. Almost every station has journalists working for it who are doing exceptional work, and I do think this is where additional funding and those kind of things are really crucial, right? Because it is expensive to have good journalism, but out of good journalism we have great stories and we reflect what the reality of our lived reality is. And I think if it's a reflection of our lived reality, then people kind of come and they look to engage, and That goes back to that feeling, in a sense, of like a communal moment. If people don't feel like the radio is reflecting them, it's not a communal moment. You know what I mean? And that's why those things are really important. And that's why local news is really important as well, is because people want to know, not everything's happening in Dublin. You know what I mean? Like, what's happening, the floods in Enniscorthy, what's happening now with that? Or, whatever your local story is important to you, and that is where some of that funding becomes incredibly important, and we're very grateful for. And I think, on the trust, that's part of the reason why I think ensuring that if it is AI created, if the content, not necessarily the background elements of the content, but the content itself is an AI voice or an AI visualization, having that labelled, I think, is very important, so that people can at least understand that it's labelled. They at least know what they're looking at and can understand their opinion and make their opinion on it.
Great.
Just on that, from a commercial perspective, which is my area, is that increasingly brands, advertisers, and obviously we want them to fund the sector for a sustainable sector into the future, are increasingly looking at brand safe environments to place their brands as opposed to brand unsafe environments where their brands are beside content that is unsafe. So it works at every level in that sense.
I'm sure that you're providing useful information from the various media outlets that you're presenting all the time. But there is a gap, and there are gaps in the information that's been provided. Let's take an example. Every single year, there are people dropping out of third-level courses. There are people in second level, and I came across examples again the other day, who said, from the parents, I can't stay in the system. I cannot wait until the Leaving Cert. I'm completely overtaken by what's happening. I can't stand, I can't wait to stay in the school system any longer. There are people dropping out. Research has shown that 8 to 10% of young people now are in danger of self-harm, particularly young females and also males, and worse than self-harm, taking their own lives. Why is all this happening? Because there's something that they're lacking. They're lacking information that they need. Now, that information, there is a tool. I'm not advertising here, I'm not mentioning any names, but there is a tool or an instrument, if you like, in existence at the moment, which can help those people in great. I'm sure you'd like to know about it, and I can tell you about it at the end here, if you like.
Could you
I can tell you about it.
Sorry.
It will help you. It will help those people who need help badly. Also women who maybe their families are reared and they want to know what am I going to do next. So there's a huge vacuum there, and at the moment the television and radio programs are not catering for those people, and they're crying out for information. They're actually, I know it more better than anybody else, they're crying out for information right across the country, not only the 26 counties, but the whole island of Ireland and beyond.
Thank you very much. So, that's a very interesting question, and you can discuss it afterwards. Try and frame it in a question, okay? No monologues. Okay, let's... Yeah. Just over there. Who's got that? Dirren, go on, and then we'll go to Frank then. Dirren, yeah.
A lot of what I have learned in my life, I have learned by accident, because I came across it. I wasn't looking for it. I have a fear that if some algorithm out there is going to define what I like, what my habits are, is going to know what kind of media I am likely to favour, that kind of serendipity or whatever it is will be gone. I don't know. It's just a thought rather than a question. But it is a question. Is there a way around that?
I actually agree with you. Data is all about what happened in the past. So I do feel like a lot of what we're looking at now is a mixture between in the Go Light app and later this year, and kind of some of the stuff we're doing across Europe with Bauer, is a mixture between algorithms and curation. So curation is trying to introduce that element of surprise. So yes, you are a K-pop fan. I can imagine, Darren, you're a huge K-pop fan. You're a K-pop fan. But did you ever know that you might love this? Do you know what I mean? I think sometimes surprise needs to come from humans, and again, that's where radio or podcasts or human intervention can be brilliant.
Yeah, lovely, yeah. So Frank there, and then we'll take you from there, Clem, yeah.
If I could just come in on
we'll answer this one first.
Just on that question, it is about accessibility as well, keeping live radio accessible in places. You know that we know homes are using smart speakers now. We've talked about in-car listening as well, access to the radio. So it is about ensuring that access, that we keep safeguard that access to radio as well.
Just finish, Dr. Finola. I am a listener to radio for the last 75 years. I nearly would be part of the century at the 100 years.
Our mascot.
If I'd held on a bit, come a bit longer, like, you know. But I was absolutely thrilled with today. As I said, I'm a listener. I'm not involved in radio or communications. But Dr. Finola, you sold it bloody well. Because
thank you.
I was listening to you on Deirdre Walsh, as I told you, and you said you were going to be on with Tahir Mara the following day, and I watched that, and I said, to hell it, here goes, I'm going off to see this. Thank you.
It worked. Thanks very much, Frank. I never met Frank before until today, so is it, I haven't paid him yet. So we have...
Actually, Darren has kind of made the point that I was going to make, but it is about the use of AI, and actually, I, the world of surprise, and surprise is mostly an imaginative act, and my new use for AI is, like, as somebody who makes documentaries and advises others who are making documentaries, my use is, if you put it into AI, that's the worst way to tell the story, and that's a good starting point. If somebody doesn't know how to tell a story, as the old one was Wikipedia, you know, so if you're going to tell somebody's life, read the Wikipedia entry and do, you know, something completely different to that anyway. You know, never start at the birth, never end at the death, all of that. But AI actually is going to be a much more efficient way of finding out how not to tell a story and how to make shit radio.
Well done. Yeah. So...